Week 6 of the NBA season is here, and while the defending champion Oklahoma City Thunder are currently on pace to break the record for most wins in a single season, there are still a ton of games left to be played on the schedule, where every team around the league will be seeking to give them their best shot in the quest to knock them off during the feast season we know is Thanksgiving. What's up, everybody, and welcome once again to the New 24, the Sean Kemp and Udonis Haslam episode. Is this marks number 40 for all our devoted audience members keeping score in the places you are listening to us from over the holiday season, as we truly appreciate your support. I'm your host, Gabriel Wilkins, and as always, I'm back beside my friend and co-host, Torrence Stagger, to talk on all things revolving around the NBA axis. What's happening?
Oh, man, doing great. Episode 40, the new 24 is for the shorties, for the children out there. Come here and learn something today.
For those of you who are avid listeners of the show and want to hit us up with your thoughts on the topics we speak on and more, you can hit us up on our official email account at tntfpod@gmail.com. Plus, follow the social media handles on Instagram and Twitter /X at TNTF underscore if you like what you hear, to get all you need as it pertains to giving news or information regarding the show. You can also find our episodes and series, such as Faces of the League, on the podcast platforms you use to listen to your favorite podcast, or by subscribing to our feed at rss.com/podcast/TNTF to ensure you're the first to listen as soon as a new episode drops. Now let's jump right into things here on the new 24, talking about the player who dons the number 23 and returned to the floor last week to make his official season debut in year 23, and that's LeBron James of the Los Angeles Lakers. The 40-year-old forward who was sidelined for the first 14 games of the year due to sciatica and officially became the first player in league history to play a total of 23 seasons, as James had 11 points and dropped 12 dimes in a double-double outing, all the while logging 30 minutes of playing time to help the Lakers knock off the Jazz at the top part of last week, as the NBA's all-time leading scorer managed to extend his double-digit scoring performance streak to a record best 1,293 games that dates all the way back to January 6, 2007. All in all, I thought LeBron looked pretty good in his debut out, man. He's doing the things that a lot of his critics, for whatever reason, don't think he can do, which is play off of the ball. You saw him making the 45 cut and taking advantage of the defense, sneaking behind the back line and dunking the ball and making plays for his teammates as well, such as hitting Gabe Vincent in the corner for a triple to cap off the third quarter with a run, setting up Jackson Hayes in a pick and roll. I think he's allowing Luka to lead the way, and he's looking forward to playing off the ball. But when he needs to play on the ball, he proved that he's more than capable of doing that as well.
Yeah, LeBron is the ultimate Swiss Army knife. You hear that term put to guys like Mikal Bridges, OG Anunoby, Draymond Green. I mean, LeBron's so great, historically and statistically speaking, that people overlook just the basics of his game. He truly has no weaknesses. Yeah, there are things that you'd rather him do as a defense or as an offense, but at the end of the day, he can fill any role in any given moment. You need rebounding tonight, his body up to it at 41, he can do it. You need him to play make. I mean, led the league in assists at one point. Probably should have won an MVP that season. You get 48 minutes of great decision-making between him and Luka handling the ball throughout the game. So as a Lakers fan or just a person following the league, just stop doubting it. Just stop doubting it until he fall off. Like, let him fall off. Let's stop chasing.
And let the process play out, because this is a Lakers team that looks pretty damn good. It's obvious LeBron's not trying to fuck up the floor or anything. He's trying to fit in right like a glove. And I was impressed by the fact that he managed to play 30 minutes in his start. And even though it looks like he's still trying to catch his wind out there through the first couple of games, I'm not worried about him long term. I think he's going to be just fine. And like Brian Scalabrine was saying on NBA Showtime on NBC and Peacock at the top of the week, people overlook this man's ability as an off-ball cutter far too often. He knows firsthand, being a former player with the Boston Celtics and the Chicago Bulls, and seeing it live and up close in person about how he would annihilate backline defenses with his activity as an off-ball cutter.
You know what would help that off-ball cutter? If the Lakers find a way to get a shooter, a consistent knockdown shooter, which has been the Achilles heel for this team for the last 3, 4 seasons, regardless of who's the head coach, regardless of the other superstar alongside LeBron James. At some point, if you got the advantage of LeBron being doubled, Luka being doubled, the greatest threat would be somebody a la Klay Thompson or of the sort. Somebody that can just knock down threes and everybody on the court knows it and respects it. Like, this team's still one of the worst 3-point shooting teams statistically in the league.
Yeah, and I believe once they get that, they could definitely turn it up a notch. And the one thing I'll say too that's good about LeBron being willing to play off the ball, it allows him to conserve his energy a lot more and apply that on a defensive end, an area where we saw him have some success last year, albeit in a limited stretch of the playoffs before they bowed out to the Minnesota Timberwolves in 5 games. So I'm definitely gonna keep my eye on LeBron and what lies ahead for him in year 23. And speaking of the number 23 here on the new 24, what about the guy who sports the number? If you were to subtract 24 minus 23, you end up getting, and that's the one we know as James Harden of the LA Clippers, the 11-time All-Star guard who hit 10 trays on the way to dropping 55 points in a row afternoon matinee affair to help the Clippers stave off the Charlotte Hornets over the weekend after exploding for 27 points during the opening quarter to help LA build a double-digit lead in the first half of play, where Uno would hit half of his triples during the outing, marking a 25th 50-point game in Harden's 17-year career, as the Beard tied the late great Kobe Bryant for the third most 50-point games in NBA history, all the while setting a new Clippers franchise record for most points scored in a single outing, joining the Hall of Famer Bob McAdoo as the only players in team history to ever record multiple 50-point outings.
So over the weekend, shout out to Tyree. I'm texting my cousin. Now my cousin texts me. He like Harden going crazy right now. I'm like, what's up? 27 in the first quarter. Say he is legendary right now. He keep this up. He might can get to 60, 70. So I go look. I'm like, oh, okay. He on it, and it's Charlotte too. So I'm like, this not a bad night to go get a career high or high number. So I hit the number one James Harden guy I know, Gabe over here. And to my surprise, he wasn't watching the game. He had no clue of what was going on. So I assume he goes to look and he like, oh, okay, yeah, I'm gonna have to go check this out. And he mentions, this is this like sec early in the second quarter. Yeah, I think he can get that double nickel tonight. And sure enough, that's what we ended up with, a 55-point game from James Harden. This deep into his career, and the guy that's been following him this whole time, Gabe, caught it.
Yeah, sometimes I guess it's better to be lucky than good. I definitely didn't have a game on. I was watching some college football and I was handling some family activities, but I was near a television at the crib. And when I got that text, it's like a league pass alert. It's only so many players that could get me to stop what I'm doing in my tracks and watch it. And it kind of took me back to the times when this was a nightly occurrence. You know, I'm old enough to remember the times, and it wasn't that long ago where James Harden was putting up 50 balls twice a week. I can remember a week in January of 2019 where he went off for 57 on a Monday night against the Memphis Grizzlies, and then followed it up a couple nights later with a 58-point performance against the Brooklyn Nets. It was such a common theme that sometimes you found yourself in awe of it, but at the same time coming to expect it, especially when he was leading the league in scoring for 3 straight years from 2017 all the way to 2020. But as he's gotten older, you realize that father time is undefeated in some ways. His first step isn't the same that it once used to be. The hamstrings injuries kind of robbed him and curtailed him of a lot of that. He reinvented his game and went from a guy that was a dynamic shooting guard to a point guard that was able to lead the league in assists not once, but 2 times. And he's, I believe, the only player in the game to lead the league in scoring at least 3 times while leading the league in assists twice at various points in his career. But it was a very special thing to witness for me especially considering the fact that he's only the third player to record a 55-point outing at the age of 36 or older, joining Stephen Curry and LeBron James in that category. He had it going, looked like his vintage self. And for a team like the Clippers that are going through a very slow start to open up the year, and that's something that we talked about last week when bringing up their chances potentially to crash the party and get to Vegas with a shot at the NBA Cup. It's been cool to watch because he's pushing through it and he's putting up career high numbers that he hasn't put up since he last led the league in scoring in 2019-20. Looks like an all-star and is trying to do his part to really help this Clippers team keep their not only playing hopes alive, but playoff hopes alive and make that run up in the West with a healthy Kawhi Leonard, who just recently joined them the following night after his 55-point outing against the Cleveland Cavaliers.
That's important because one thing you mentioned was he's never missed the playoffs ever in his career. That's a hell of a record that you definitely want to keep up.
Yeah, and just knowing people that are close to James, I think that's something that he takes a lot of personal pride in. And games like that is special to watch. It's kind of like seeing an old pitcher in baseball that had it once upon a time get a no-hitter. So I cherish moments like that because you don't know when they're gonna come around again. And just to put it in perspective for you, this is the second year in a row that James Harden has had a 50-point outing. And Kevin Durant, one of the game's all-time greatest scorers, one of only eight men in the history of the league to score 30,000 points or more in his career, he hasn't recorded a 50-point outing since 2022. So they don't always come around that often, even for some of the game's greatest scorers as they get older and reach that stage in their career, which is year 17 in the illustrious career of James Harden. But let's move away from talking about a pair of all-star veterans to two rookies in particular, whose names we might have brought up briefly while touching on the first-year talent that we were looking forward to watching this season in episodes 35 and 36 here on the New 24, but have recently constructed some grand performances in the last week that warrant your attention in New Orleans Pelicans center Derrick Queen and Charlotte Hornets wing Con Kniple, as we recently saw Queen set the record for most dimes in an opening quarter by a rookie center against his former high school running mate and Cooper Flagg, on the way to a 20-point, 11-assist, 7-rebound night against the Mavs, just days after posting 30 points and 9 boards against the Joker Nikola Jokic and the Denver Nuggets, while Con Kniple has managed to drop at least 20 points or more in 6 out of his last 9 outings as of this recording, in which he managed to score 30 or more twice in that time span, as the Duke product dropped a career high 32 against the Milwaukee Bucks, including 30 points on the Heat. Is Kniple's averaging 22 points per game on a near 50-40-90 shooting clip from the floor in the month of November. I've been impressed with Con Kniple, man. Con Kniple looking like a guy that is a 10-year veteran on the floor when I watch him. Coming off a ball screen, getting to the rim downhill, knocking down shots and catch and shoot situations. 10 years ago in the NBA, there was a player by the name of Devin Booker that entered the league with the Phoenix Suns that made a lot of noise. Con Kniple, he looks like he's one of the guys from that mold. And he's helping a famous podcaster's case for him potentially being on the 2028 USA Olympic squad with the way that he's playing right now. And if I'm a guy like LaMelo Ball, I'm going to head coach Charles Lee and I'm saying, hey, if we in a close game, let's figure out a way to get some plays and actions drawn up for Con Kniple to lead us home, because he's proven to be a guy that laid down the stretch when he catches fire, can hold his own with the best of them. He just dropped 28 points against the Atlanta Hawks, who had Dyson Daniels checking him for most of the night. And Dyson Daniels, if you know anything about this game, one of the top defenders in the league, was runner-up last year for Defensive Player of the Year. I like what I'm seeing from him a lot. And that three-headed monster, if Charlotte can stay healthy with LaMelo Ball, Con Kniple, and Brandon Miller leading the way, it's going to be scary out in the East. And I like what the Hornets have done.
Yeah, like with Con Kniple, like that last point you just made, the three-headed monster, that was the trade they tried to make last year with Dalton Knecht, when they tried to bring Dalton Knecht in before the Mark Williams trade failed. You mentioned a lot of great things about him going down here. Because I didn't expect that when he was advertised. They just advertised him as a shooter. So I see him. I see white boy. I see shooting. That's that. You know what I'm saying? That's the usual. But I start seeing him go downhill. Then I'm seeing him dunk the ball. Then I'm seeing him play make out of screens. I seen somebody make a good comparison. You went to Devin Booker. That was pretty surprising, but it's not really far off. Someone said, "This is Klay Thompson if Klay could put the ball on the floor." And I was like, yeah, because see, that's the difference between him and like a Booker is he already got a high 3-point attempts volume. Like he putting them threes up. Him, LaMelo, Brandon Miller. I mean, that's almost like a new run TMC for the old folks out there listening. You know, and it goes back to that point. Why are we trading LaMelo Ball? You gotta pay somebody max money anyway. The guys that's gonna be here, they're not coming up yet for those contracts. Keep what you got and keep building.
Yeah, and speaking of the other rookie and none other than Derrick Queen, I see a young version of DeMarcus Cousins watching him. Very nimble on his feet, can be a nightmare matchup for a lot of centers around the league to guard. Just watching the footage of him going toe to toe with Nikola Jokic, using a stutter dribble to get inside the lane, finish with a layup. You could tell when Jokic was defending him, he didn't know what to expect. And that was a very tough matchup and a tall task for him. He has a very advanced feel for a young man his age playing this game. And I don't know if he was a late bloomer or not, but he has guard skill. And that's not easy to teach a lot of bigs, regardless of era. He's a guy that you can utilize as an offensive hub and bring the ball up the floor, set up and initiate things for you. I just really like what I'm seeing from Derrick Queen, and he's showing exactly why you play your young guys, and for a guy that was the subject of a lot of heat that wasn't necessarily his own due to the Pelicans taking a sizable swing in the draft and sacrificing an unprotected first round pick to move up and select him, he's been one of their biggest positives as they sit at the bottom of the Western Conference standings right now.
Yeah, definitely a best case scenario as far as that trade because he been balling, and he got the ultimate cosign, Tim Duncan, the mysterious one who never has anything to say. He identified it early in that young man. Like, nah, I like him. It's Tim Duncan. He don't say much. So hearing that alone, I was like, all right, let me lock in. And that DeMarcus Cousins comparison, he's not as athletic or physically dominant as DeMarcus was, but one thing that immediately came to mind was watching him get to the rim from the 3-point line. It's like so something I saw Boogie able to do a lot, especially in his time in New Orleans when he played with the Anthony Davis. And you look at New Orleans, the number one question is outside of the obvious, always number one question is Zion going to stay healthy? Is how can we get these two unique basketball players to play together for long stretches of the game? Both can play make, both can get to the rim, both are just very unique for what they bring to the table offensively. Now, defensively is my question because even on the offensive end, yeah, he has the matchup advantage against most centers every night, but I still see him mostly as a power forward ideally. If there was a way to get him and Zion both in there with another like big, somebody really defensively focused, I mean, sky's the limit. You already got Trey Murphy, you got Jeremiah Fears over there, another young player. Like New Orleans has the talent. They just can't bring it together for some reason. They're just never able to just pull it all the way together. The one time they did, they had a guy like Rajon Rondo there when DeMarcus Cousins was in New Orleans. So Derrick Queen, sky's the limit. This rookie of the year is gonna be a crazy campaign this year. Got a
Oh,
lot of
yeah.
guys this year.
Oh, yeah. Like right now, I would say Knipple is cementing himself as the front runner, but it could change in any given time. Derrick Queen, whether or not he's a power forward or a center, that's a big million-dollar question. Out in New Orleans, you got a lot of fans wanting to call him the Big Easy. It was not labeling him, and I like that. But as far as what position is he, that's a fascinating question in itself because he's 6'9". 250, and he's only around 19 or 20 years of age. I'm curious to see if he's going to continue to keep growing. But if you were able to slide him over to the four and have Zion at the three, a healthy version of him beside Derrick Quinn. You get that five in there, and they might even have it with Yves Mecey. You never know, because Billy Donovan was talking about the team at the top of the week when the Bulls squared off against the Pelicans about how even though they have one of the worst records in all of the NBA right now, it's talent on this team. And he was just talking about they just haven't either been healthy or they just haven't been able to find a way to get the pieces as a collective to fully gel with one another. If they could find a way to get that right, and that's Joe Dumars and company's job to do over these coming months and weeks ahead, maybe some things will start making sense out in the 504. But let's get into the team that just recently swept their season series against the Cleveland Cavs, whose fan base is currently in the midst of celebrating their longest winning streak since the 2021-22 season, and that's the Toronto Raptors, the team that entered the week sitting second overall in the East and is on an 8-game win streak after capturing wins in 12 out of their last 13 outings as of this recording, that also has the best record in games played between the 10 Eastern Conference teams that currently have winning records as we speak, and became the first squad to officially clinch their spot in the NBA Cup knockout round after winning East Group A and defeating the Wizards at home this past week as a victory against the Pacers in their final group play contest on Wednesday will grant them home court in the quarterfinal round showdowns that are scheduled to take place between December 9th and 10th. This team has kind of caught me by surprise, but at the same time, they have not. But I could tell you what's contributing to their success. They're playing at a fast pace, and guys are playing together. And most importantly, they got that ball moving. And when you got the ball moving, like you hear a lot of coaches say and players alike, it creates energy and it's leading to success. This was a team that got off to a 1-4 start under Darko Rajakovic. They could have easily abandoned ship and scrapped the system completely, but they doubled down and stuck with it, and it's paying off. Brandon Ingram, a guy that we know is capable of playing in an all-star level when healthy, is doing just that, getting to it in the mid-range area of the floor. You saw him have a 30-point performance against the Cleveland Cavaliers to open up the week on NBA Monday with Peacock. Looked great and has bought in. Talked about how Darko Rajakovic has been a leader for this club and helping rally the troops. You see Emmanuel Quickley, a guy that a lot of people were out on, finding a way to be selfless, sacrificing his impact as a scorer to be a playmaker. They've been running these two-guard lineups with him and Jamal Shedd, the second-year guard out of the University of Houston, that's really helped them get out, play fast. And when you got an offense like that, combined with the size and length that they have on a defensive end with guys like Scottie Barnes, Jakob Poeltl, and the like, you can find a way to win games. If I'm not mistaken, the Raptors are the only team in the NBA that had three players on their roster averaging 19 points per game or more between Brandon Ingram, Scottie Barnes, and RJ Barrett.
Yeah, let's just call it even. They got three guys over there putting up 20 points a night. And along with that, you got five guys on the roster averaging four assists per game. So not only is the ball moving, but it's moving from a variety of guys. I think they're second in the league in assists this season and one of only three teams currently shooting 50% from the field every night. The other two teams are the Lakers and Nuggets. And when I think of those teams, I think of mismatches. And that's exactly what the Raptors have been doing a great job of doing. That's why you push the ball. When you got three guys like that, 6'8", 6'9" wings, unique skill sets, all able to handle the ball, put the ball on the floor and play make. Yeah, you can cause a lot of confusion for the opposing team just trying to get set in their defense night to night. I think they've done a wonderful job because everybody criticized those moves when this team was being put together. Oh, you got three guys over there who gonna shoot. Where the spacing gonna come from? They games too alike. For all we know, Yusuf Mujeri, he might be fired for no reason unless it was, you know, other reasons as to why he was let go, because now he looking like he knew what he was doing once again with this roster, the way it's playing. You mentioned the NBA Cup. 3-0, very likely to be 4-0. With all the advantages and the unique skill set of this team, I think they got a real strong chance of getting to Vegas.
Oh, they want it. Just listening to some of the quotes in the Peacock broadcast on Monday night, they were talking about Darko Rajakovic's background coaching in Serbia and how they're no stranger to cup play events and so forth. And he was talking about how they, in spite of clinching, still have unfinished business left. Like I said earlier, they have to win against the Indiana Pacers in their group play finale in order to gain home court advantage in the quarterfinal round. And that's something that these guys want. So when you talk about the points that you bring up, such as their size and their length, yeah, that's going to make them a very tough out with the way that they playing right now. And Brandon Ingram, he walking it like he talking it. And that's something I said on 30 Teams in 24 Days. We talked about the Raptors. He said that he believed that this was a playoff team. And if that guy can stay healthy and play and perform at the level that he has, which is an all-star level in this Eastern Conference, there is no telling where the Toronto Raptors could potentially finish in the Eastern Conference standings. Because with the start that they've gotten off to, they put themselves in position to where it's a great possibility that they could have a best of seven series in round one with home court advantage.
Yeah, they definitely can. Shout out to the notorious BI3. I seen that that's his nickname out there.
Yeah, I like
I'm
that.
like, yeah, that's fire right there. And the coach too, because you've been listening to the show long enough, or you're new here. I'm not really a big fan of the European coach to the NBA trend that we've been seeing. Once again, though, this is turning out to be one of the best case scenarios. He's proven to be a problem solver, as I mentioned. People were quick to criticize this roster at one point, and now it's looking like a genius thing to have.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up that nickname for Brandon Ingram, the notorious BI3, because Matt Devlin, who's the Raptors play-by-play announcer, has been pushing that one. And him and Jack Armstrong on the call, they do a hell of a job. One of the best play-by-play and color duos that you probably find in all of the league if you really treasure that on League Pass on a nightly basis. But leaving north of the border and clearing customs to return stateside to a city that's only about a 4-hour drive from Toronto and where the NBA's longest win streak to date this season currently resides in Detroit, where the Pistons recently tied the franchise record for the longest winning streak in franchise history as they won their 13th consecutive outing against the Pacers at the top part of the week, just 2 seasons after undergoing a historic 28-game losing skid and entering week six of the NBA season, is one of only 6 teams to rank among the top 10 in both offensive and defensive rating, is the unit that received significant contributions from Danish Jenkins, Javonte Green, and Paul Reed in the absence of several key players over the course of their current win streak, are now back at full strength for the first time all year long, as Jaden Ivey recently made his season debut, scoring 10 points in 15 minutes against Milwaukee, while Tobias Harris also managed to make his return in the same outing following a 9-game absence.
Dog, I remember making so much fun of the Pistons. It was on that losing streak, and you were championing Cade Cunningham, like, nah, he gonna get through this. This is good for him. And I'm like, oh, here go this dude. And sure enough, man, I've been saying this a lot. Monty Williams, you brother, you ain't shit. You went in there and took them folks' money, and man, you weren't even trying to work because folks saw the talent there, and you weren't willing to work. You didn't want to be there. And you had gold in front of you. JB Bickerstaff, a guy who's had to take many a bad jobs across the league. This is sort of a redemption arc for him, too. I remember that stupid stuff from last year, like a dress code at practice thing.
Yeah,
And I'm like, why are
we
we?
talked about that. We went back and forth about that prior to
Yeah,
the new year, and
I'm
I
not like,
remember it
oh,
like it was yesterday.
yeah, I'm like, who gives a fuck who's wearing a hood at practice? But I mean, I understand in life you got to establish order sometimes. Now, I'm not saying that JB Bickerstaff is Phil Jackson. I'm not saying that Cade Cunningham is Michael Jordan. And it remains to be seen who will emerge as the Scottie Pippen of the situation. But right now, they're on a 72 and 10 pace. We know Oklahoma City, we know they are, but the Detroit Pistons are as well. Now, I'm a pretty smart person, I've been told. So I know that the Pistons winning 70 games this season, that's close to impossible. But I don't think there was a single person that had them as a 60-win team this season. What about you? You see 60 wins for this team now?
Well, you know, when we talked about them on 30 teams in 24 days, 50 was the magic number. But when you get out to a start like this, you got to start increasing that number. The last time they won 60 games or more, you have to go all the way back to the 2005-2006 season when they went 64-18 under the late great head coach Flip Saunders before getting knocked out in the Eastern Conference Finals 4-2 by the Miami Heat, who would eventually win the championship that year with Dwyane Wade and Shaquille O'Neal. I think they got a shot. I like where their head is at. You hear guys like Cade Cunningham after the game putting up a 20-10, 6 line saying, hey, we could have closed that game out a lot better, you know? And we still have some things that we could clean up and get better at. But this is the thing that stands out to me when I look at Detroit. In the early days of the season, and even prior to the start of the season, we were talking about how big of an absence Malik Beasley was and would be to this group. And while, you know, we hope that he bounces back on his feet and finds a deal in the league, it's been some guys that must have heard what we were saying that have taken that to heart and said, hey, I can play too. And Danish Jenkins is one of those guys, a guy that was on a two-way deal, had his coming out party against the Washington Wizards when they were down with injury to several players. And you see him taking his opportunity and running with it. So much so that he's in the starting lineup now and been an instant impact alongside of Cade Cunningham and Jalen Duren, who stepped up in a few games prior to Cade's return and Tobias Harris's return and Jaden Ivey putting the ball on the deck, doing things I haven't seen him do since his days at the AAU level. And that lets me know he's feeling very, very comfortable, looking like a young Chris Webber. You hear the comparisons, not only on Pistons Twitter, but you hear Rasheed Wallace saying it. And the thing that's funny about this win streak, the last two Pistons teams to win 13 games in a row were the 89-90 Pistons and the 2003-04 Pistons. And if you know something about those teams, you know they happen to win championships. And the reason why I know that is because a friend of the program and ours and Brendan Welper always seeks to remind me of that. And was very stoked and excited once they won the 13th straight and was talking about it with me at the top of the week. I think they got a shot. I definitely think that they have a shot to win 60 if they continue to play at the level that they have. And the one thing I like about this team, man, and I'm not just saying this on no cliche bullshit, they got a lot of heart. A lot of heart. Paul Reed, DePaul alum. It's some teams where he could easily be a backup center. He's third string, making the most out of his minutes. No Isaiah Stewart, no Jalen Duren. I got it. Had a monster outing against the Chicago Bulls. Javonte Green, a guy that Bulls fans know very well, has come into his own, had a resurgence in limited minutes, been a big boost off the bench. JB Bickerstaff is having a hell of a redemption arc, especially when you consider the fact that this was a guy that was ousted out of Cleveland because some of the players over there didn't see eye to eye with him.
Yeah, I love conflict. You know, like folks not seeing eye to eye sometimes to me is a good sign. That keeps the phony shit out the way. And if I had to imagine some of the people he couldn't see eye to eye with on Cleveland, I think it'd be obvious. When you look at guys like Jalen Duren and Isaiah Stewart versus what they got over there in Cleveland, it's just a different energy and a culture over there. And I don't like that cliche right there of culture, but that 28-game losing streak put something in Cade that he'll never let go of throughout the duration of his career. And him playing at this level, his connection to the city of Detroit, you know, that clip going around when he told the Detroit Pistons fans, hey, I'm all in on draft night, and he proving it every step of the way. Anybody that comes into that locker room, to that city, put that uniform on, you're starting to gain a certain respect for it again. There's an identity being built in Detroit, and it's like through their superstar too.
And you know what I'm enjoying the most watching it is the fact that it aligns perfectly with the teams of past from there. They play a very physical brand of basketball for this era. And that's the things that they take pride in over there a ton. And I always believed in Cade because just listening to him on podcasts during that season, open up and talk about it when most players wouldn't have, and still was trying to ensure and tell guys to keep the faith. That always spoke volumes to me. Like, well, hey, he understands what comes with it. And he took it on the chin at a time when a lot of guys would have ran from it.
And I know, like right now, they're getting a lot of comparisons, like with OKC, which I can understand. K, Shea, the bigs, but like you said, that physical style of play—that's been the one thing that separated the Thunder the last couple of seasons. They play physical. They have a reputation for being physical. They get away with a lot of things because they're physical. So I always love to see a team add that to the arsenal, to the toolbox, because it does become an advantage in the postseason. Which, even when you go back to that last year, if I'm a Detroit Pistons fan, if I'm a player on that team, I feel like we should have won that series.
Oh yeah, you hear Isaiah Stewart talking about that all the time. He was talking about that during the offseason, that he felt like if he was involved, that they definitely would have won that series, as well as Jaden Ivey, who I know some Pistons fans on Twitter have been kind of 50-50 on, but in the limited minutes he's received, he looks very well. And they got him coming off the bench, starting out. I have no problem with that. When you got a thing like this going, you want to keep everything as normal as you can, and graciously ramp him back up to speed. Detroit's in very great shape, and it's some teams that we know that would love to be in the position that they are in right now. But carrying on from a team that resides in the Motor City to discussing a few guys on the squad that's a 5-hour nonstop flight away from them on the West Coast, and the Golden State Warriors, a franchise that enters the week having lost 3 games in a row and has struggled offensively, especially in the minutes where Stephen Curry has gone to the sidelines. Warriors bench came into week 6, ranked 22nd in net rating after finishing last season 8th in that category, as only the Pacers, Bucks, and Wizards have experienced bigger drop-offs. Recently played a league-high 18 games through the first 32 days of the regular season and are now in the midst of a 5-game homestand, will they receive a total of 3 2-day breaks and get that practice and recovery time that I'm sure head coach Steve Kerr would appreciate right now based on his recent remarks?
You know, one thing over the years that's always been interesting to me, especially this last few, the Warriors, they'll have chemistry issues. Some that are very obvious to the public. And you got the extremes with Draymond and Jordan Poole, KD's time, and now this Jonathan Kuminga saga, and who knows what else in the locker room. And I'm like, the national media would find a way to place the blame on LeBron James's style of leadership if this was his team. We see that we still got people writing articles about Kevin Durant's time in Phoenix. Why is Steph Curry able to escape this line of questioning in the national media? Where is the expectation for him to not just right the ship with his play? Because, of course, he can do that. He's going to electrify the NBA fans at least once a week on a grand level. But at some point, somebody got to be the bad guy. And it can't always be Draymond. At some point, the dogs bark. It don't scare nobody no more. You, whether that's, hey, we need more help in here before, like you did before y'all got Jimmy Butler, or something that I know Steph's too loyal to do. May not make sense because of the success that's been had over there, but I just think it's time to just start questioning Steve Kerr, the job he's done over there recently, and his just overall future there with the team. You mentioned the schedule. Nobody sounds more tired in press conferences than Steve Kerr. No one has been let off the hook more for their clear dislike for a player on their team the way he has with Jonathan Kuminga. Steve Kerr is still holding on to small ball. Even teams like the Miami Heat have started to play more double bigs. The LA Clippers, when Ty Lue got there, very prideful on playing 5-0. Hey, Zubac gonna be in the game now. People have moved on. Steve Kerr still trying to play 3 and 4 guard lineups. The team struggles defensively when Draymond's not on the floor. Statistically, they rebound well, but if you watch games closely, if they're not being scrappy And their energy isn't up because that's one thing they try to do is play 10, 11 guys, keep the energy up, move around on defense. But for the most part, this team can't compete against teams with size. And please don't let it be a game where Steph's struggling to knock down threes. Now the offense is more stagnant. At some point, people stop listening to the coach. It's just a natural thing that happens in sports. And I'm just curious as to has that time come for Steve Kerr?
You know, you talk about Steve Kerr and the Warriors and how small ball, a thing that was once in vogue, is no longer in this current era. I got some numbers for you. The Warriors have been 18.6 points per 100 possessions better with Draymond Green on the floor than they've been with him on the bench, with the bigger difference coming, like you said, on defense. They had a game against Orlando last week where they were outscored by 17 points in the 16 minutes and 36 seconds when Draymond Green was resting on the bench in a game that they would end up losing by 8. When it comes to Steve Kerr's recent remarks, I was very disappointed by that. I was disappointed by that because this is a guy that was once a former player in this league, a guy that had the privilege of winning 5 championships between his time with the Chicago Bulls in the late 90s and San Antonio Spurs in the early 2000s. I would have thought a guy like Steve Kerr would know better and understand that this is what comes with the war. Everybody goes through it. Your team isn't the exception. I understand being frustrated, but at the same time, like Torrence talked about, you got to empower the young guys on your club, knowing that you have a roster that's aging, knowing that you have a roster that lacks size. Jonathan Kuminga, in my opinion, at the start of the season, was playing some impressive basketball and was a big part as to why they won 3 out of their first 4 games. However, as I'm pretty sure Steve Kerr knows, championships aren't won and lost in 4 games, and it's a marathon, it's not a sprint. I don't know why Stephen Curry doesn't get the criticism that LeBron James and Kevin Durant do for their leadership issues, but if I had to guess, I think a lot of that has to do with recency bias and the fact that they happened to not too long ago capture a championship, which was their fourth, and I want to say at the time, 7 or 8 years. And a lot of people fall for that and think, well, just because you've gotten to the mountaintop so many times that you can't be criticized, when in reality, you can. And that's no knock on Stephen Curry as a player, but I do think that it's a question that deserves to be asked at this stage because we're in year 17 with number 30. And like you said, this is a guy that is a box office star still, but the pieces around him not adding up. And Draymond, like you said, he can't take all the trays.
No, he definitely can't. And let me just a sidebar here for Steph Curry's splash brother, Klay Thompson, former Warrior. Because, you know, I'm starting to get, you know, how I hate the 07, 08 Celtics team. I'm like, hey, they just got all the media jobs. They keep talking about that ring like it was a dynasty. Well, this is might make me a hypocrite, but you got the Warriors dynasty. And quite a few members of that dynasty just got this whole thing confused. As an individual, you're allowed to take pride in your accomplishments. Everybody doesn't win. It is a great separator. But in the grand scheme of sports, amongst friends, barbershop, the hood, the rec center, wherever you have these conversations on the internet, when we talk about rings, we're talking about rings between the elite. The Magics, the Birds, the Jordans, the Kobes, the Stephs, the KDs, the Browns, the Kareems. When we're trying to rank them, we'll mention a guy like Robert Horry because he has 7. Like, okay, he just got a lot of them, so we got to mention him as far as when we start talking about people with rings. But Draymond Green and Klay Thompson, they don't get the concept that we don't care about their rings. Klay want to wave 4 fingers at people all the time since his game fell off, and he wants people to honor and respect it. When it's like, Klay, people respect your game. You're one of the greatest shooters ever. Textbook jump shot. You can't get any more perfect. But when I look back on this Warriors dynasty, I don't look at Klay as the second most important figure. I got Draymond right behind Steph Curry. Before I get to Klay Thompson, even when I'm just talking about basketball talent, I think Andrew Bogut is a bigger basketball talent. If we're talking about a former number one pick, anchored that defense to that first championship. Andre Iguodala, former All-Star, Swiss Army knife. A guy like Sean Livingston, I believe, is a better basketball player because, I mean, imagine what he would have been without that devastating leg injury. So we're talking about four or five people who I feel are more responsible in some ways than you and just are better basketball players. That's not to mention Kevin Durant. Now, Klay's had incredible game sixes in the postseason. He's risen to the occasion. He has unique records, 37 and a quarter. Hey, Scott Skiles got 30 assists in the game. We're not comparing him to John Stockton. So, yeah, you can have records, but that's not going to put you over a franchise player. And Klay Thompson has a history of talking down to a lot of guys in the league and wanting to get sensitive when it's a star player directing that energy to him. We all know the thing with him and Ja. It's really not that big of a deal because guys should be able to trash talk each other in the league. That's basketball, that's sports. But Klay Thompson and his post-game press conference or interview in the locker room, he opened the door for the media to criticize Ja Morant because his feelings was hurt, as he quoted and said, wondered about LeBron in 2016. I guess his feelings was hurt. Or what was the guy, Rodney McGruder of the Pistons a few years back when Klay was on the broadcast saying, oh man, that guy's a bum. He won't be in the league next season. But because you've been struggling and you've been playing like a bum, you want to be sensitive to those words. And you want to take that opportunity to tear down Ja Morant, which, not to say anything that Klay said was wrong in the grand scheme of things. He had valid criticisms. But why are we talking about that right now? Why did it have to go to that extent?
You know, my problem with Golden State is just as a collective, and I know Klay is no longer a part of that, but he played a significant piece in the fabric that we currently see in this day and time as it pertains to the Warriors. They so caught up in the past that they not even acknowledging what shit really is in the present. You know, part of being a dominant team is not resting on your laurels. Part of being a dominant team is winning and then coming back the next season saying, how are we going to figure out a way to do this again? Something that we currently seeing take place in Oklahoma City with a Thunder team that's on pace to go 77-5 and surpass the 2015-16 Warriors for the most wins in a single season. This team continuously thinks, or at least they exude that attitude to me, that all they have to do is just get in the dance. And they just gonna figure out a way to accomplish the job. And it's not like that no more. And it ain't been like that in some years. And it's this sense of entitlement that I have a problem with when it comes to Golden State. And I think a lot of fans overlook it. I think a lot of media members overlook it. And then in turn, they look dumbfounded when they see this team either bowing out in a play-in round or losing in the conference semifinals, which has been the norm off and on over these last few years since they last touched the Larry O'Brien Trophy.
Yeah, and I would say that was the last time I saw teams being intimidated by them was that NBA Finals in 2022. Since then, people been just coming to Chase Center, playing them like they just any other team. But every time a microphone is in front of Steve Kerr, Draymond Green, or even, like I said, Klay Thompson, who's not a member of the team anymore, they want to keep laying a resume on the table. And it's a new season ahead. That was before. That's not now. And even if I pose the question of why Steph avoiding criticism, make no mistake about it, I think Steph deserves better. But Steph has to ask for better. See, LeBron or Kevin Durant would have done something to change their situation and circumstances. Now, that's not to say go to the extent of leaving what you built in Golden State, but there might be some moves that need to be made. Like if you Steph and you talking about playing to 42, 43 years old, that's 4 or 5 years. And at the level he playing, I mean, hey, bro, maybe you might want to ask for some trades to happen. Maybe you want to start partnering with the front office to figure out how we can get another max star in there, a la the Lakers bringing in a Luka, which is, I mean, a miracle of a trade. But at one point, Joe Lacob said this organization was light years ahead.
And to add to your point on Steph Curry, I don't hear Stephen Curry saying nothing about the schedule as far as complaints. I don't hear him coming off in interviews or press conferences as though he has a sense of entitlement, as though all they got to do is show up and they'll find a way to get in the dance once again. If I don't hear that from him, why am I hearing it from Steve Kerr and Draymond Green? Because if I'm Steve Kerr and I see that my best player, my franchise player, ain't saying shit about it publicly, then why am I? And the same applies to Draymond. Everybody's going through it. This is the war of attrition. It's like Jamie Foxx said in the movie Ray, you knew the rules when you got into this.
Hey man, Steph, keep being great, man. But see that's the thing. What Jordan Poole say? Steph carrying a lot of the people on his back. Steph got four rings. You see what I'm saying? Like when Steph talk about his four rings, that's who we want to hear it from. Y'all got y'all four rings because of 30. Everybody else, Klay doing the 1, 2, 3, 4 ring count. Kobe did that with five. That was Kobe being Bryant. You're Klay Thompson. It's a difference. Respect that. Honor that. You a son of the game. You should know better.
Moving along from the discussion regarding the Warriors and the talking on all things exclusively regarding the team that resides in the city we're recording from, and that is the Chicago Bulls. It's part of a special segment here on the New 24 known as the Bull Market Index. Let's get right into it. The last time we talked about the franchise with six banners atop the UC rafters, we gave our thoughts and reactions on their red hot start to the year where they managed to win six out of their first seven games. But we also touched on the battles that lie ahead with their Central Division mates, with the likes of the Bucks, Cavs, and Pistons, on top of the Spurs as well. Teams that had established stars on their roster that could take over a game when needed and do the job to deliver a win on a given night. Since that time span, we've seen the Bulls go from 6-1 to start the year to 3-7 over their last 10 games, which included a five-game losing skid during that particular stretch, while also witnessing them tail off metric-wise in offensive and defensive rating as they went from being within the top 10 to the levels we expected them to be at, which is among the middle of the pack, if not slightly lower. The Bulls dropped those contests against the Bucks and Cavs as Giannis and Donovan Mitchell took care of business in the final frame of those games, where we watched the Bulls hold a double-digit lead at one point in time. Wembanyama helped to seal the deal for the Spurs and gave fans on Madison Street a show to help San Antonio prevail in their long trip to town this year. Not to mention losing in their second matchup with Detroit on the season during the stretch where the Pistons were without Cade Cunningham and Jalen Duren, among several key guys due to injuries we talked about when touching on Detroit. Lost in double OT against the Jazz on the night Coby White made his return to the lineup. But we'd see the Bulls bounce back to take the next two games on their three-game West Coast road swing, defeating the Nuggets and Blazers in dramatic fashion. The schedule lightens up a bit now with teams such as the Hornets, Pacers, who they'll see twice over a six-day span, and Nets pulling into town. But as we know and have seen with this team throughout the years, Torrance, no matter who they play, there is no such thing as an easy win to come by.
This team, they play down to their competition. This has been one of the more obvious bullet points of the Billy Donovan era. It goes back to things mentioned so far in this episode. You talk about the Pistons and really building a culture through their coach and their superstar. We don't have that here with this team and this roster or with our coaching staff. We all know Vooch post-game interview. You got Bouzelas and what's the kid, Jalen Smith. You got them jumping up and down. We in the first quarter of the season, Vooch obviously not in the mood because why are we struggling with the Washington Wizards and we want to be taken seriously? And this is why we told a lot of you Bulls fans to calm down with that 5-0 start because that's who these guys are. This is not a tough team. This is a soft team. And I can say that because one of the players said it. It's easy to see. It's easy to spot. And it's not just the up and down play style. It's not the finesse. It's not the ball movement, the 3-point shooting. When it's all clicking, it looks beautiful. It's in that demeanor. Like I said, there's a difference between Isaiah Stewart and Jalen Duren and Evan Mobley and Jared Allen. being tougher don't always mean you're gonna win games, but sometimes you can just punk a team into a victory. Truth be told, it can happen. Look at the 2022 Golden State Warriors and what they did to the Celtics after game three in that series. When I look at the Bulls, Billy Donovan said it. We don't have a guy that we can point to and say that's our defensive stopper. That's code word for enforcer. We don't have a guy to protect Josh Giddey, Kobe White. We don't have that intimidating force. And as Josh Giddey said, we don't necessarily have the talent night tonight. We don't have room to be playing down to our competition, but this is something that's happened year after year after year with this team. And they don't get it together. They're going to be back in the same position as every season, where they are in the standings right now, in the thick of the play-in portion of the bracket, trying to figure out, should we tank or should we try to win games?
You know, I heard a longtime Chicago sportscaster whose work I respect, and Jason Goff, days before the Wizards and Bulls showdown, say something that he always says about teams that lack physicality. He always say they're a bit light in the ass. When I watch this Bulls team, they are the epitome of that term. I talked about it last time when we touched on the Bulls and the Bull Market Index about how they are auditioning for the attention of the league when they were at 5-0 in the standings. They went from a team that was a feel-good story to a team that was hunted, and they needed to pivot their mindset into realizing and understanding that. Yet they have not. And the defensive issues are alarming because the same things continue to happen. You have guys that aren't fighting over screens, guys that aren't making the proper rotations, guys that continue to get caught up ball watching, which in turn leads to them getting beat backdoor so many times, and guys not even paying attention to the scouting report. And that's why I think guys like Nikola Vucevic are reacting the way that they are reacting and should be. Because for the fans that weren't watching that game against Washington, Corey Kispert was going crazy in the first quarter. And the reason why is because they were going underneath on screens as though he's with us guy. Meaning, oh, we want him to shoot. When in reality, you don't want Corey Kispert shooting the ball, because if you pay attention to his game and his player profile, he's kind of like a carbon copy of Joe Harris. So if anything, that's a guy that you need to be on when he on the perimeter, and you need to be trying to run him off. I wasn't pleased with a lot of the play, even in spite of some of the wins that they had. Most notably, the game against Portland, where they entered the fourth quarter with a double-digit lead. At one point, I want to say they were up by as many as 20 in that game. And there were far too many defensive breakdowns. And then, two, who gonna be willing to get a rebound? That's another problem with this team late in games. And that's why you see so many teams getting the second chance points off of long threes. And in turn, a 20-point lead get cut to 10, 10 go to 5, and now you in jeopardy of losing the game. And for the fans that think that Nikola Vucevic don't have the right to say what he's saying, I'm going to say this. Does Vucevic have his limitations? Yes, he does. But Nikola Vucevic has been an all-star in this league. He's also been a part of a few playoff teams. Yeah, they didn't go that far. But if there's anybody that's earned the right to say something in his locker room, it's him. Especially when, if it wasn't for two big shots that he hit to win games over the course of that first 17 outings against the likes of the Philadelphia 76ers and the one that he hit for game in Portland, this team could easily be 7-10 right now. And not that that's that big of a difference, but he's come through for them more often than not, even in spite of his inconsistencies. So don't tell me that Nikola Vucevic, even in spite of his limitations, has no right to say such thing when Nikola Vucevic been in the fire with these guys. Nikola Vucevic played a big part in why they beat Washington by 1 point. He knows that that's the worst team in the league. He understands that. These other guys need to fall the fucking line and realize, like, hey, if you want to be taken serious in this league, you take care of the opponents that you're supposed to take care of, plain and simple.
As a Bulls fan, I'm disgusted with this team. I don't like them. And to use the Chicago term, I see a lot of goofies. I see some goofy behavior. It got to stop. I mean, I'm not saying guys aren't allowed to have fun, but well, come on, we all know the difference in what that looked like. I told you this is not a Disney movie. That's not what we here to do. And to be an old man, I remember Jimmy Butler in an interview saying, "When I came to the league, I was in there with Joakim, Taj, D. Rose, Luar," and he said the way guys used to talk to each other and hold each other accountable at practice, he thought that was the norm in the NBA. And it's like ever since we lost those guys and we had the Jim Boylan era and Zach was here, DeMar was here, it don't matter. We've lost that identity as a franchise. The one thing we could hang our hat on during those times where we're gonna bring max effort every night. We might not even know who gonna be on the team. It's Nate Robinson tonight, it's Javonte Green. If you go back to the John Salmons day, the effort was gonna be there. Talent might not be coaching, whatever front office BS. We ain't gotta get into that. But that effort, I mentioned it when we first started this show, man. As a fan, I wanna come home. And if nothing else, even if I don't have the best team, I want to be entertained and I want to feel like guys is giving it they all out there. Y'all fooled everybody with the high scoring and the ball movement, but you can't fool somebody like me. Gabe, no, I could care less about a high octane offense. Where's that toughness at? Phoenix Suns for a lot of years faltered because when it came down to it, they weren't tough enough.
And see, this is a team that has one of the best benches in the NBA when they going, right? This is a team that they try to sell us on and say, well, oh, we have depth. But in spite of all of that, you lack a very important intangible, which is toughness. And when you lack that combined with a star player, it looms large, especially in outings where you fall short of performing up to what should be the standard. Something in which I don't know if this organization has at this point. And if they don't, they need to figure out a way to establish one before it's too late. Because the route that they continuously seek to take, it's not it. So you've heard us speak on all of the marquee teams around the league right now, including our hometown team in the Chicago Bulls. What about the players who have stood out to us that warrants some attention for their play over the first month of the regular season, the ones who people aren't discussing enough? Welcome to Baller You Should Know, a brand new monthly segment where throughout the season, we're going to show love to a couple of the top performers around the NBA you need to know.
Oh man, top of my list, usually you want to look for some guys under the radar, guys coming up, guys that the national media hasn't gotten around to. But starting this off, I'm gonna go to a guy who you may have heard me criticize last week, and that's Dylan Brooks. I asked the question, why is Dylan Brooks shooting so damn much? Because that's what I've said on every team Dylan Brooks has been on. Whether that's the Memphis Grizzlies or the Houston Rockets, previous to coming to the Phoenix Suns. But Dylan Brooks, like a Russell Westbrook, you just learn to appreciate it because everything else he's brought to the table, and you realize that the shot selection and the shot attempts is more of a personality trait than it is a basketball flaw. This is somebody who's going to step up where he sees his team falter. Need somebody to go guard the other team's best player, Dylan Brooks steps up. Star player is struggling or down with an injury, Dylan Brooks, like, I can carry more of the scoring load tonight. That toughness. He'll just go out there and just start shit with somebody because that's just what the energy is needed for tonight. Star player, role player, guy on the bench, staring down a coach, Dylan Brooks does it. And when he had the back and forth with LeBron in his last year in Memphis, he caught a lot of heat for that. Why? I don't know. Yeah, it's Bron, whatever, like that. And he's supposed to be just Dylan Brooks. But man, it feel good, like I said, to have that conflict, that toughness for somebody to say, hey, man, forget your crown. I think we got a shot. And that's Dylan Brooks, man. And we said it 30 teams in 24 days. The Phoenix Suns might not be a playoff team, but they're going to have a chance every night. And right now, to me, they exceeded expectations. And he has a large part to do with it, especially without Jalen Green so far, pretty much this season.
Yeah, Dylan Brooks, I've always been high on him from the time I saw him play at Oregon. He's a guy that's going to leave his imprint no matter where he is in the league. And more often than not, it's going to be a positive imprint. He's one of those guys where if he's on your team, you love him. If he's not on your team, he's your enemy. But you got to appreciate guys like that, that are tone setters and are not only good at helping you establish something, but show your young guys how to get after it and go about your business on the floor. For me, I'm gonna go with a guy that's a fellow lefty, a guy that at one point in time was a third string guard to now he's become one of the main facilitators on his team. And this is a team that has struggled with that outside of what they receive from the league's most valuable player. And that's the Oklahoma City Thunder. And I'm talking about AJ Mitchell, man. AJ Mitchell, a second year player who we ourselves kind of overlooked a little bit when we was talking about some of the top second year players during the opening weeks of the season. This dude right now is putting up career high numbers and is looking like the lead man to win Sixth Man of the Year honors in the NBA. You see him now evolving is one of the critical guys that opposing teams have to focus on slowing down going into matchups against the defending champions. AJ Mitchell, he just recently had a game where he dropped 20 points on 8-for-8 shooting from the floor in just 24 minutes. He's one of these guys that you need to know from the standpoint of every single night he's come with it and he's helped them even in spite of some of their early struggles. Like you take the opening night game against the Rockets, right? He has 16 points in 14 minutes. Comes back the next night, drops 26 in another double overtime outing against the Pacers. Has 17 in another close outing against the Dallas Mavericks. And then scored 18 in a win against the Sacramento Kings, in which they narrowly escaped coming back from down double digits. And this is a guy who went to UC Santa Barbara, was the 38th overall pick in the 2024 draft, and spent most of last year on a two-way deal before being promoted to the main roster after the trade deadline, and came into the year looking like his role might be limited after Nikola Topic was set to make his return, but he's taking advantage of Topic's absence due to testicular cancer and several other injuries, most notably the all-star wing Jalen Williams, and carved out a massive role for himself after dealing with a turf toe last year. But in the limited minutes he had last season, he looked real good. But right now, AJ Mitchell, he's been everything and more for Oklahoma City. And for those who don't know, he was actually selected by the New York Knicks, who traded him to Oklahoma City for cash. I'm pretty sure Leon Rose and World Wide West kind of wishing they had that one back, especially with Jalen Brunson being out of commission right now and them needing a backup guard that could provide the services that AJ Mitchell has been able to provide the best team in basketball through the first month and a half of the year. Although there will be no games played on Thanksgiving Day, there are a ton of games taking place on Wednesday, starting with a triple header affair of NBA Cup group play outings over on ESPN, as you got the top seeded team in the East we just spoke about, and that is the Pistons, rolling out to Boston to face Jaylen Brown and the Seas at 5 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Central, followed by a Western Conference Finals rematch between the Wolves and Thunder down in OKC, where fans can catch the battle of the two guards in Ant-Man and SGA at 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 6:30 p.m. Central, prior to catching another playoff rematch from last year between another pair of squads out west that went to seven games in the opening round as the Rockets and Warriors square off in the nightcap. Cup group play games will conclude on Friday night as well, with the Bucks and Knicks squaring off in their East Group C finale affair out in NYC, followed by the Mavs and Lakers dueling it out on the Pacific and West Group B, as you could catch both of those contests on Amazon Prime and your local listings for game times.
This week, you know, we focusing pretty much on the NBA Cup games. This the last week of group play. So we got Wolves OKC Wednesday, Suns OKC Friday, and I'm looking forward to that Pistons Heat game this Saturday. And at the time of this recording, we got Clippers Lakers, which is pretty much the second stop on the Chris Paul retirement tour. that we know has started. He's officially announced his retirement. So definitely want to give a shout out to Chris Paul. I cracked a lot of jokes on him over the years, but in order to be the subject of many jokes and criticism and slander, you got to be great. And hey, the man known as the point guard, no matter what team he's went to, he's always elevated that team to a level that most of those franchises never had been to prior to him arriving. Whether that's the Hornets, the Clippers, in some ways they didn't get a championship, but even the Houston Rockets, Phoenix Suns, back to OKC again, when you look at where they are now, a lot of people would say that that was a tipping point. You know, he went over there and got the most out of them, and they had to go back to their original plan of tanking because he came over there and had them in the postseason. So, man, Chris Paul, hey, it's been dope, man. They don't even make point guards like you no more. Like, literally, they really don't. You the last of a dying breed. And hey, my God, man, you definitely left that breed with something to be remembered by, man. So, shout out to him.
Yeah, definitely a farewell to Chris Paul in his final season, 21st season in the NBA. Got a chance to catch him a couple of times live in action. Caught him last year as a member of the Spurs. Caught him with the Houston Rockets. Covered him when he was a member of the Houston Rockets and gave me some fun memories and times that I'll never forget in the 2 seasons that he had in Houston. And was really a guy that helped to introduce basketball to that Oklahoma City market. When the Hornets were there, as a byproduct of the unfortunate tragedies that occurred in New Orleans due to Hurricane Katrina, Chris Paul is definitely one of the last of the Mohicans. You don't see too many guards of his caliber in the league nowadays. And we're talking about a guy that is second all time on the assist leaderboard in NBA history, steals leaderboard as well, multi-time all-star, one of the greatest players in the history of this game, not only to never win a championship, but to never win an MVP. But gave us some fun-filled moments. Definitely appreciate North Carolina's own and a Wake Forest legend. As far as games to watch for me this week, can't overlook that game between Minnesota and Oklahoma City. Minnesota blew a tough game against Phoenix last Friday that put their chances of potentially getting in a knockout round in jeopardy because you got to win this game against Oklahoma City to have a chance. And you want to talk about a tough game, we talk about an Oklahoma City team that's only lost once through their first 18 games. And like I said earlier, is on pace to win 77 games. They unbeaten at home. That's a tough one. Then you also got the games on Friday going down. Like you say, Phoenix, Oklahoma City, that's definitely a big game. Orlando at Detroit. Both of these teams are undefeated as of this recording in cup play. That game could potentially determine who comes out of Group B in the East or who has to fight for their life as a wild card recipient. So I think that's going to be a huge game going on in the 3-1-3. And then on Sunday, you got the Raptors, a team we just talked about, going to New York. Former Knick and Emmanuel Quickley. Been putting together some good games, reuniting with some people at MSG. Sure, he'll be looking for some revenge. Brandon Ingram been playing some great basketball, like we talked about, alongside of Scotty Barnes. These are marquee matchups for franchises like them that have already put the league on notice. But if you really want to send a message, going into Madison Square Garden and knocking out a team that represented in the conference finals shall be a good one.
Yeah, man, back to it. Shea, Ant, I've been waiting on this matchup. I want to see it. I want to see a little trash talking back and forth, guarding each other. I know it's early in the regular season, but y'all throwing shots in commercials, man. Hey, don't forget about that one when y'all step on the court.
Oh yeah, and gotta shout out Julius Randle as well, who's been playing some impressive basketball, looking like a guy, like we said, in 30 teams in 24 days, and found him a home in Minnesota, man, and could potentially be a lock to make an all NBA team if he continues to play at the level that he has. I'm expecting a high octane fun showdown in that conference finals rematch for sure. Well, that's a wrap on this episode of the New 24. If you've enjoyed all that you've heard through the first 40 episodes, including this one, feel free to leave us a 5-star rating, letting us know what you love about it across the platforms you use to listen to all your favorite podcasts. If we can't thank you enough for all of your support, or just send us an email informing us of your thoughts on it directly at tntfpod@gmail.com. Make sure to also give us a follow on the official social media platforms for the New 24 across Instagram and Twitter /X at TNTF_ to make sure you don't miss any announcements as it pertains to future shows and episodes, including on all of the latest currently trending around the NBA today. Don't forget to subscribe to our RSS feed, where you can also check out our series such as Faces of the League on rss.com/podcast/TNTF. Definitely continue to stay in tune with us to get the insights you need on all that is around the league. As we'll be back next week to continue keeping you tapped in on it all. Once again, for myself, Gabriel Wilkins, and my co-host, Torrence Stagger, thanks for tuning in, as we hope that you enjoy the holiday weekend. Be safe, and as always,